Hey, you ever had a raccoon keep you from going to jail? No? Well, grab you a cold drink and tune in to episode 3 of the Wrecking Yard Podcast.
The song I'm going to use today that I can't afford is that song Sitting at a Bar by Rehab, but not that crappy 2008 remake. I mean that really, the original one that came out like 2000 was Every Bar, you know, in 2002. That's the one. Boy, I spent a lot of time in bars in this car. You like Datsuns? We're going to talk a whole lot today about a Datsun 280Z. I can't wait to see you. Let's jump in.
Welcome to the Wrecking Yard. I'm Jerry Wayne Longmire, and y'all are presumably still y'all out here in the shop, and it's a balmy, what was that, 92 degrees, and feels like about 600% humidity. So if y'all see me sweating real bad, don't worry. I ain't a heart attack. Just had that checked. It's just hot, baby. Just welcome to the swamp. Before we get too deep in today's episode about the 77 Datsun 280Z, we're going to read some comments from last week's episode. I got them right here, actually. Let's see. Kai Hawaiian Death Metal says, "Man, I remember taking one of my cowboy-looking friends to a few death metal shows. Unfortunately, none of them had a cool-ass El Camino." Bro, this is kind of wild, but I grew up with a metal guitarist. One of my good friends from my adolescence in A-Leaf is a dude named Marzi Montazeri. And Marzi has played with Superjoint Ritual, and he was real good friends with Dimebag Darrell back in the day, and he played with Phil Anselmo and the Illegals. And for a long time, Marzi's had his own band called Heaviest Texas. And for the last, I don't know, 10 years, every once in a while, he's had me open for him. And it's always, that's a fun dichotomy when I show up and start talking at that show. But I have found there's a lot of crossover between metal and hillbilly. Let's see, who we got next? Patrick Ancona, 1193. Oh, no way. I got stories about 240, 260, 280 Zs and trying to keep the carb synced up and things pointed in the proper direction at speed. My buddy has a speed shop now. I miss the all carburetor days. I'm torn on that, Bubba. I'll be honest with you. I like fuel injection. I understand it. And it's not that I couldn't do carburetors. I did. I had plenty of carburetor cars, and I learned how to rebuild carburetors with my old man and had other people teach me tricks along the way. But I don't miss flooded engines at 6 o'clock in the morning when you're trying to get to work. And I don't miss having to re-ring an engine every 100, 150,000 miles. And maybe that's not everybody else's experience, but my experience post-fuel injection has been much more mileage, and I enjoy that. What we got next? JS-Texan Jeff. "You are a master storyteller, sir. There's no way, if you had asked me, would I sit and watch a 53-minute video of a good old boy in a shop just talking old days, I would have said yes. Yeah, here I am, thoroughly enjoying it. Keep them coming." Bubba, if you'd have told me 2 years ago that I was going to be sitting in my shop talking to a camera for 53 minutes like a crazy person, I'd looked at you like you were nuts. Like, who the hell's going to watch that? Here we are. And I hope y'all keep watching, so disregard what all I just said. All right, that's enough for comments. We will throw that in the waste file. Dunzo, bub. I got me a little project to fuss with here. Now let's dive off into it. 2002 was a weird time for a lot of reasons, right? We had the Y2K scare a couple years before. We had all survived that and all had extra batteries. And we were knee-deep in war after the heinous attack the previous September on American soil. Perhaps the weirdest reason for me was that I found myself freshly disentangled and free from a two-year relationship with an exotic dancer from Dallas that can only be described as disastrously chaotic. On top of that, as a result of this disentanglement, I'm now living in my mom and daddy's house again temporarily, and nobody ever wants to have to go back to their daddy's roof, especially if you've been gone for a while. Boy, I left her in Blanca, Colorado, along with her family and most of my stuff. You ever just, You ever just want to have a situation so bad that you're just, you just leave? Just leave all your stuff. I left all my tools, a couple vehicles, most importantly, a 77 J10 pickup truck, which I still think about to this day. But I just need it out. And I'm certainly, you know, not going to lay the blame completely at her feet like I was some angel or something. And I don't have any animosity towards her these days. I have a very happy, fulfilled life, and this was a long time ago. It's just one of us was physically and violently abusive, you know, and one of us was me. And after she ran over me with a 1969 Ford Galaxy convertible that I bought her for her birthday, I decided to buy a bus ticket to Texas and just figure out the details when I got there. And then even after that, she came back to Houston and we reconciled. And then she punched me in the face in front of my mama, and I immediately disreconciled with her in an effort to spare her her life from my mother. It worked, and I hope she found whatever she is looking for and some peace. You know, just as long as it's far away from me. Funny enough, first time I told my buddy Ralphie that story, he goes, damn, Jerry Wayne, you lived a comic's life before you're a comic. That was a terrible Ralphie May impression. Yeah, so we're gonna go off to my 20s today. Circus 2002. That's a little nod to Ron Sexton. Y'all may know him as Donnie Baker, but I was a big fan. Rest in peace, Ron. And some of you are probably going, what's this got to do with the Datsun 280Z? Not a damn thing, but I got to set the scene here. I'd also just snagged me a good gig at a little local indie tea shop called Test Masters right over there off Tanner Road and I think like Clay Road area. I was feeling pretty good about that. Had a little folded money in my pocket. And my papa always told me, no matter what you're going through, man always feels better. He's got a little folding money in his pocket. And, old man wasn't wrong about it. Boy, that's just coming right on there. I'm not going to waste too much time talking about the Fairlady Z, just because I think it's been covered to death by most car guys, and I just don't want to get up here and be redundant about it. So I'm just very, and mine wasn't a Fairlady, you know? So those have been covered. We're just going to talk about the actual little Z cars. 240Z hit American shores in 1969, right? And immediately spelled the end for British dominance in the two-seater sport car market, right? Because those things, first of all, they priced them lower than MGB GTs. Second, they were kicking the crap out of MGB GTs, and they were kicking the crap out of the little Opals. And the Porsches, the 914, the S model was the only one that would beat it. You know, the regular 914 couldn't hang with the 240. I mean, they were only 2,500 pounds plus 150 horsepower with a true independent rear suspension, you know, and that puts it pretty close to the power to weight ratio of a 350 equipped 1969 Corvette. You know, not exactly. The Corvette still has a better power-to-weight ratio. I'm not trying to say they're the same car. I'm just saying it was close, very comparable. And that was definitely the lightest car I'd had. The lightest car I'd owned before that was a 72 VW Super Beetle. Me and my dad had Baja'd out, and it had a hot little 1641 in it. But that thing liked to hop around, you know? I never had a car I hated staying in one lane as much as that Super Beetle. But that blasted Datsun, when you get in that Datsun, it was like somebody turned the gravity up to 11. You know what I mean? That thing hugged. I know some of you are probably sitting there looking at me and this picture of this Datsun and thinking, J-Dub, we need a physics explanation. Well, if you can imagine, when I come back home from Blanca, Colorado, I was svelte, 200 pounds. Apparently, drilling water wells in the desert and being miserable was the best diet I'd ever been on in my life. And even at 200 pounds, I will tell you, getting in and out of that Datsun, that's a young man's car, buddy. Thankfully, back then, I had 25-year-old knees, too. Sometimes now when I'm at the gym doing squats, I kind of pretend in my head like I'm training to own another Datsun Z car. Boy, this stuff works like a charm. I'm glad I looked that little recipe up. It's taking all that surface oxidation right off, but it's still leaving the patina, you know? Yeah, I know, there's more than a few of you going to show up in comments and, it ain't patina, it's patina. And I tell you right here, right now, if you say patina in my garage, I'm going to politely but firmly ask you to leave. Damn, I done forgot where I was now. Oh, yeah. When you sat in that 280Z, it was like sitting flat with your legs out in front of you. You know, like your legs were like level with your waist almost, like driving a bobsled. And you're only about 11 or 12 inches off the ground at that point. And it's just floorboard right there under your legs. Very, very shallow floorboards. I remember one night I was leaving work at Testmasters kind of late. And I started bebopping right through Bear Creek Park at a rate of speed that the officer that pulled me over described as idiotic. And I panicked when he pulled me over because I had a freshly popped Lone Star Tall Boy sitting right there in the blasted cup container. And, how it is, you get off work tired late at night, you done worked a long day. I was 25 years old. Only thing I had on my mind was a shower and then maybe a little carousing at the local pool hall later. And I'm not promoting or glorifying drinking and driving, but there's a huge gap, I think, between a cold beer on the way home from work to settle your nerves and sport drinking at a bar with your buddies and then jumping behind the wheel and driving east down the westbound side of I-10 like your Johnny Paycheck or something. I mean, oddly enough, handling radioactive materials all day and having gay slurs hollered at you by mediocre mad welders and their bosses is a bit of a stressful occupation. Yeah. Cosmo pulled me over. He's a big old fella. I mean, he was every bit of 6 foot, you know. He climbed out of that Crown Vic, and I didn't know what to do, so I started looking for somewhere to hide that Lone Star Tall Boy I just popped open. And I set it down in the passenger floorboard, but the damn thing still stood up past the stick shift of the car because the floorboard was so shallow. So I didn't know what to do. I was panicking, you know? This dude's walking up to the car now. I'm trying to decide what to do with this beer. And in my fumbling, I knocked it over in the passenger floorboard, and it just started filling up the passenger floor pan, you know? It was still making that goot, 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 goot sound when he went walking up with his flashlight on him. I mean, it was damn near a full beer. I'm done now. That's all I'm thinking. You're done, buddy. He's so tall, I'm like eye level with his holster, you know. He's going to have to bend down to look at me in that car, and he's going to smell that brewery I'm swimming in and build a new jailhouse on top of my carcass. And then it happens. You know that little nod we get every once in a while? That lucky break you didn't see coming? Small little ripple in the universe lets you know somewhere out there in the grand cosmos, someone or something is looking out for you. I didn't even know what happened at first. I just heard him say, "What the shit?" Which, To this day, it's still the funniest exclamatory expression I've ever heard out of a grown man. And he hollered it. What the shit? He took off running back for his car. I couldn't tell what was going on. It's still pretty dark. His headlights are in my mirror. But just vaguely in the rear view mirror, I can see the silhouette of what turned out to be two big old raccoons who had wandered into his still open door and were happily exploring his lunch bag on the dash of that cruiser. He was trying to shoo him out. He drew his gun on him. He ran back there and drew his pistol, trying to shoo him out. And then they started growling and snarling and snapping at him. And I think he panicked a little bit, so he kicked the door shut. But he still had the gun pointed at him. It was the funniest thing in the world. I'm up in my car. I don't know what to do, you know? He pointed his gun at him like he was going to light up a car full of suspects. You know, raccoons down. I don't even know what possessed me to get out of the car, but I rolled out and hollered, "What do I do?" He's on his radio calling for a 10 whatever raccoon stole your cruiser is. Looks at me and barks out at me, "Hey, I gotta deal with this. Stop whipping through here like some kind of idiot. I don't want to have to peel that car off you one night." Which, in retrospect, I think was either a small car joke or a fat joke, but I didn't care because I was free. Whew. I drove that Lone Star bathtub home just crying laughing. I had to sit in the driveway finish laughing before I could even go in the house. It took 7 cans of Resolve, 3 hours, and a wetback to make that car drivable again. Oh, yeah. You know, every used car is different. Every car is different, right? I mean, especially as you travel back in manufacturing history. But still, you and your friends could have like 5 modern F-150s and with the same package. And those are still different trucks with different idiosyncrasies and a little bit different history, whether that was on the assembly line or just previous owners tinkering with it. Just as an example, one of the most reliable pickups I ever owned in my life was a 2000 GMC Z71 with a 4L60. And at 388,000 miles, that was 2 water pumps, a front end rebuild, and a differential replacement, but I blew it out pulling a concrete trailer, so that was really on me. At the same time, my buddy had the exact same truck and spent thousands of dollars chasing weird battery draws and transmission problems. That's the thing that's hard to get through to people about the truck astrology videos. I don't put trucks, even if I'm throwing a fastball at a truck, if a truck's in my video, it's because it's probably something I dig. I only one time put a vehicle in my video that I just outright despised, and I didn't really like the way it made me feel, so I don't even do that anymore. And when I make fun of a truck, I'm not saying all those trucks are like that. I'm saying that one in that picture. Right? I'm just making a snap judgment and a joke about the vehicle in that picture. Doesn't mean everybody has an F-150, has a minivan, or whatever it is people are getting worked up about. If they're in my videos, I probably dig them more than I let on. My 280 had its own idiosyncrasies for sure. It came to me by way of Arizona. My younger cousin married a fellow from Arizona, and he had bought it from some old street racer or something in Southern California and limped it to East Texas and then traded it to my uncle for a work pickup or something. And then my dad, I think at the time, was looking for a project. Him and Uncle Larry did some horse trading about it, and he ended up with it. I wasn't around at the time, but he was telling me all about it on the phone. We had talked about all the work he was doing to it. I know he spent a ton of time straightening out the electrical system on it. And I don't know if that's that's a common Dotson thing, or if it was just that one. But I know you got really excited about it because he found out it had a ported and polished N42 Rebello head on it. And he also thought it probably had some Rebello internals. We don't know if it had a cam or not or whatever. Rebello is an engine builder out of California. And they pretty much made their name, I think, doing Z-Car stuff, Z-Car performance. They do all kinds of stuff now, BMW, a lot of different imports. But they were good. So that's probably how the dude came about those parts even back then, was because he was already there around where they're at. Mine sure had its... Yeah, at the time, my dad was daily driving that car. But right after I moved home, he got a big promotion and decided to treat himself to a brand new Impala SS. And him and my mom were having a house built at the time, so he was wanting to lay off projects. Personally, between you and me, the man's 6'3". I think he was tired, and he's got bad knees. I think he was tired of folding himself in and out of that Datsun. And a no air conditioner hot rod in Houston gets old pretty quick. I was already restless, even with the new gig already. I used to wander around a lot back then. And I was already thinking about running off somewhere. And I think him and my mom decided to sell me that car, thinking it might get me rooted and keep me busy for a little bit. My mom told me one time in confidence that my dad didn't like working on stuff as much when I wasn't around. And honestly, I couldn't fathom that, because even at that age, I still hadn't learned how to hold the flashlight correctly for him. But I will tell you, it was just the car I needed after my experience in Colorado. I remember the first time I felt that front end twist and lurch while that inline six hollered, I was hooked. Loved the way that car sounded. She is a four speed. She used every bit of them four gears. A common issue with hopping those engines up, though, and putting shaved heads on them, is it's really easy to bump the compression past drivability, basically. We always suspected that they had done that with this Z, because it detonated and ran like smashed ass on low-end pump gas. And even with high octane and a can of octane booster to keep it starting easy, you know, it'd still kill every mosquito around. Oh man, she freaking launched though. 2700 revolutions per minute and just a lightly feathered clutch from a standstill got you a sharp bark, boy. From the rear tires, that front end would just twist up and the thing would jump from a red light like a tick. Love the way that car launched. The only thing it'd leave behind it is a faintly blue cloud of high octane smoke to remember it by. My brother Joey at the time had this hot little Ford Ranger, and we'd run up and down Highway 6 bar hopping and basically just racing from red light to red light and having a grand old time. By this point, the shy Pentecostal kid is gone, baby, and his blue-collar gear jamming, pull-shooting, skirt-catching alter ego Jerry Wayne was driving the ship. I'd race anybody, anytime. She won a lot, and coincidentally, she also lost a bunch, too. But when I lost, it was almost always to a car that was much more heavily invested in. Very rarely did a car on her level beat her. We was on Highway 6 one night, on our way to some little beer joint or something, and we're three wide. My brother's in the Ranger over here. I'm in the middle. On the left side, the old notchback Mustang is a guy we knew. We knew who owned the car. It was a fast car. And the old notchback starts goosing a little bit, right? Just giving me the nod, you know. Now I know his car, right? And I know he's going to eat my lunch after second gear, but I am determined to make him look silly until we get there. Now my brother's over here revving the Danger Ranger, and I started easing old Lady Blue up to that 2,700 revolution per minute mark I was telling y'all about earlier. That night I pushed it to about 3. I didn't want to spin, but I wanted to put on a good show and get out in front just in case she'd lurch a lane, because she wouldn't do that every once in a while. Man, when that light turned green, that old snakeskin boot of mine drew back on that clutch. I mean, just three pumps. Till the tires grabbed and screamed like a jungle cat, baby. I couldn't even hear their cars or see them because I was through the intersection digging for second gear with a mushroom cloud of burn oil and tire filling the intersection. And then I seen them red and blue lights come right out of that same cloud. Unbeknownst to me, there'd been a damn deputy sheriff sitting perpendicular at the light that everyone but me noticed. And they just let off and let me put on a show for old Johnny Law. Now, it wasn't the first time, and I knew it wasn't going to be the last time I did something stupid and in a car. So I just hammered on the brakes and whipped it in that strip center parking lot there. And it was, I remember it was an older cop and a much younger cop. He looked great. I mean, he must have been fresh out of academy or something. And they both came up on both sides of the car with the flashlight shining off in the car. And I remember the younger cop walks up my passenger window. I got the windows down, no AC. And he goes, "Man, I sure like this car." Bro, that older cop just stared at him, right? Like made like a dad noise, like a disappointed, like, just like, shut the hell up, you know? And I remember that older cop looked down at me and goes, "You're pretty bold, ain't you?" And I remember very earnestly looking right back up at him and going, "What?" And I got the younger cop to giggling. And the old man barked at him to go call it in with my paperwork, I guess just to get him out of his hair. The older cop just stood there that whole time, just drumming his fingers on top of that Datsun, you know? Just stared at me. When he finally spoke, he was like, "I'm just trying to decide what to do with you." And I was a bit of a smart aleck in them days. I had a big old mouth on me for sure, and I hadn't had it smashed in enough yet to know when to use it. I remember I popped out right off at, "Boy, you can't do nothing to me. My paper's good, and all I got coming to me is an acceleration ticket unless you want to be cool." Whoo! Boy, he got hot. He said, "I tell you what, that situation could be whatever the hell I want. Including and up to having this death trap dismantled. So you might ought to shut your trap before you inspire me and save your jokes for the stage." Which is wild because I wasn't even a comic yet, you know. How'd he know? That don't want to come off. Either way, he seemed like he was serious, so I shut the hell up. But on my paperwork, everything come back clean, and my insurance, all that good stuff. He ended up writing me a exhibition of acceleration ticket, and he also wrote me for a cracked taillight. I'd never had anybody write me for a bad tail lens, but I think he was just looking for something to hang paper on me about, which it did spoil my night, but it was a heck of a lot better than going to jail, you know, for stupidity. I remember right before I drove off, that younger cop one more time goes, "Man, I sure like all these stickers back here on your back windshield." And I drove away, and that older cop was just staring at me in that parking lot. And I've often wondered to myself how long that young man stayed in law enforcement. Didn't seem like he had the right cut for it. Yeah, me and my brother wrenched on that car a bunch, and I'll talk more about my brother in detail, but he likes his privacy, and so I don't put him on blast much. That's probably why y'all hear me talk about him much. But we wrenched on that car a bunch. We put window seals in it, and daggum U-joints, rear transmission seal. Man, my boss was pretty kind to me. He was a dude named Mark, and he would let me use the shop on the weekends to work on that Datsun. We lifted the front end with a shop crane and put a whole new rack and pinion there, that aftermarket rack and pinion I bought. And then, that's not even the best part. There was a tamale guy on the corner that sold tamales, old Mexican dude. And he did an alignment on that car for me after I changed the rack and pinion with a tape measure and a flashlight for $40. And we sat there and ate tamales while he did it. And when he was done, whoo! That front end was on point, son. Right. So don't ever blame the tools again. It's about the craftsman. It ain't about the tools. I want to hear, oh, I can't do good work because I got these Ryobi tools. That's nonsense. You can't do good work because you. You know, that was also when I owned the cars the same time that my Papa Longmire died. Papa, from Shop Talk, basically. He fell down welding in his shop, broke his hip. And after he lost his mobility, got put in that wheelchair, he had a stroke pretty shortly after, and he never recovered from the stroke. In fact, he died on the exact same day as my Papa Clark, just like 6 years later. I think I forgot to tell y'all that. Did I tell y'all that in the El Camino one? I don't remember if I did or not. Right after Papa Clark gave me that El Camino, he died, like a month or two after he gave me that car. In fact, I think it's when we went up for his funeral that me and my dad rebuilt the engine. After the funeral, Papa Longmire was a different kind of tough, though. Is a quieter, more angry kind. He had survived a pretty awful childhood and adolescence, and then World War II, and lost his twin brother in World War II. He had also survived all the countless trucking stories he had told me over the years, and he had a balloon patch put on his heart by a experimental technique, and this heart surgeon put this balloon patch on my Pepple's heart in the early 80s, died, like, everybody's dying in this podcast, but he died like a couple weeks after he did Pepple's surgery, and nobody still to this day knows what he did, but my Pepple was the longest living recipient of Edward's heart patch. Of a balloon patch, a balloon heart patch that there was when he passed in his 80s. I remember I had to work, so my parents went up to East Texas without me, and then I was going to come up and meet them later because I was going to have to be a pallbearer with the other grandchildren. Man, if y'all got time, I want to tell y'all two more stories about this. My meemaw, Papa's wife, was killed by a bread truck driver who was on opiates, and he flew on the freeway and hit my aunt's Suburban, and it ended up killing Meemaw, and it damaged my aunt really badly. It was October 24th, 1995. I will never forget it. She was the first person close to me I lost. And it was something else, man. She taught Sunday school at the same church in town for like 50 something years, so it's the biggest funeral procession you ever seen in that town. But my father and his siblings and Papa all lawyered up, right? And they sued the Rainbow Bread Company and got a pretty big old sum. I know Papa walked out. Papa got around, I don't know, I don't want to guess that, but I think it was around $300K or somewhere like that. Well, the old man was lonely. He just lost his wife, and he never had any kind of money before. So he went to town buying rifles and trucks and fencing off the property and what have you. And one of the funniest things was when he passed, all the siblings, I think, thought they were going to get some money, and they all gathered around to see what, you know, Daddy had left them. But they found out he had $38 left in his checking account when he died. He damn near spent every dime. Oh, man, was just blowing and going, baby. And that ain't even the best part. Pebble's cantankerous as hell. He's hard to get along with. He's kind of mean. And one day him and Uncle Larry was coming home from a doctor's appointment over in Longview and got talking about Meemaw's funeral and how nice it was. And I guess Papa sort of queried that what his kids might do for him, you know, when it was his turn to go on to the other side. And Uncle Larry, being just as sharp as he was all the time, told him, I tell you what, you die, I'm just going to put you in a pine box. I'm going to float you down Rabbit Creek. Boy, that must have struck Papa some way, because basically what we found out was the day after him and Larry went to that doctor's appointment, the very next morning, Papa Longmire got up, drove down to the Raider funeral home, and bought himself the most diamond gem funeral that money could buy. But it had full military honors. It had a diamond gem casket that looked like a Cadillac, Bubba. He had a color guard doing a full 21 gun salute. I still got one of the shells from it. Oh, that old buzzard was something else, boy. I'm glad he still lives in my head. He was a hoot. The day I was supposed to drive up, go to his funeral after my parents, I lost keys to the Z car, so I took a screwdriver and, you know, hey, you used to be able to break the ignition and fired that old Z car up, drove it up to Kilgore. And on the way into town, I just stopped at AutoZone and bought me an ignition lock set, because back then, auto parts places carried parts. It was a wild time. You could just go in there and ask them for stuff, and most of the time they had it. It was really cool. And I sat out there, I sat on their driveway at Papa's house while all the old men, while all the men in the family talked, did nothing, you know, like shop talk. I sat in that Datsun 280Z and I changed the ignition lock set out, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes. And I had this older cousin named Otis Wayne. We call him Odie Wayne. And Odie Wayne was from Memphis. And he was amazed by how quick I did that lock set in and out of that Datsun. And then he's like, boy, y'all come up to Memphis, I got some work for you. But he never did say what the work was. You know, after getting away from that crazy woman I got away from, I ended up selling that car for a woman. That's not true. I was kind of bored with it, too. I'd gotten a promotion myself and bought me a 94 F-150. And, man, it was a sharp truck. And I was interested in this gal that I'd met through work, but she lived in, like, Cape Coral, Florida. And, honestly, I'd already lived in Florida once, and I was thinking about moving out there to be closer to her. So I sold the car for $1,200 to help me with the move. I wasn't driving it anymore, and the insurance was eating me up on two cars at one time. If you can imagine, insurance companies didn't like me very much when I was 25. Man, that's the first time I almost punched a lowballer. That was one of my first Craigslist sales. A dude, no, he wasn't from Craigslist. He was a dude from the Z Club of Houston. And he come out and looked at that car, and he looked at the car for 2 minutes and offered me $600. And I had to walk away from that dude because I almost put hands on him. I was so hot. I had to walk away, and I let him stew in it for a minute. And I went back in the garage and talked to my dad a little bit, told my dad I was about to run him off. And I come back out there, and I guess he kind of figured out the gist things that I wasn't going to let him screw me over. So he ended up paying me the full $1,200 for the car, which at the time wasn't a bad price. And then I called that girl to tell her what I'd done, and she proceeded to tell me about a whole lot of things that she'd been lying about for a long time. And I think I hung up on her before she was done talking. Too soon, lady. Too soon. I'm pretty sure me and my brother drank up every bit of that $1,200 in the following nights at the local little bars. Oh, the F-150 was sharp. We'll have to talk about that old truck sometime. Ooh, the beginning of the end for Ford transmission problems for me. The 280Z renewed my love for cars at a time when my interest was waning. I just wasn't really doing a lot of stuff with cars in. It wasn't my priority. And it wasn't one of the cars that inspired my love for cars, but it's damn sure one of the ones that reeled me back in. Honestly, this day, I've only driven a handful of cars that felt like they connected the road like old Lady Blue did. That's one of my favorite cars I've ever driven. I mean, you could hit that turn on Westheimer behind West Oaks Mall at every bit 120 miles an hour and never even hear a chirp. And it didn't really bother me, you know, to sell the car back then, because I had some feelings about folks hoarding cars. Because after Papa Clark died, we lost so many cool cars in the wrecking yard because my grandmother was selling it all off for pennies on the dollars to pay for her gambling habits. She couldn't stay away from Shreveport and the boats, and she basically sold everything the old man had collected for a little bit of nothing. But then after the Cash for Clunkers program in 2009, I changed my feelings on that. You hoard all the cars you want, keep Uncle Sam out of it. Man, I have really come to enjoy doing this for you guys. And once again, I can't thank you enough for the support. And I love that you guys come and hang out in the live chat and watch with me. And man, just do me a favor. Tell a friend about it. Share it. Listen with your buddies at work or something. Please like and subscribe, of course, you know, but I figure if you're already here, you're already doing that. It's just about time for me to start hitting the road again. But I'm still going to find a way to do this while I travel, even if I got to put two or three of them in the can for when I'm gone. There's a possibility I may be going to the Middle East over Christmas to do stuff for the soldiers again. So I'll keep you guys posted on that. I think we covered everything. And I just want you to know that I appreciate you more than you know. And I'll see you guys next week. What are we going to do next week? I don't even know yet. It's still up in the air. But I'll see you guys next week. I love you, and I'm JW. Oh, I feel like I forgot something. Nah, let it ride.